This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We were just talking about in-state tuition to help a group of young people trying to make a way for themselves. Now let's shift to advice that an older generation might offer to a younger generation.
You know, advice on how to land a job, how to get rich in the stock market, how to get out of debt and stay out of debt, how to afford a first house or apartment. These are just some of the big questions that might prompt some very useful advice.
Advice like this on the stock market. Fear and greed rule the markets.
Or on personal finances. Debt can be a killer.
Or how about this general purpose piece of advice? Never be intimidated by people with graduate degrees.
Well, no one ever told us that.
Which happens to be the title and the central message of John Spooner's most recent book. The full title is actually No One Ever Told Us That, Money and Life, Letters to My Grandchildren. John Spooner is an investment advisor at Morgan Stanley Smith Barney in Boston. He's also a seasoned author of both fiction and nonfiction. His latest book offers essential lessons about life, about money, about investing, and the quest for financial security. And he joins us now. John Spooner, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you in.
Wow. I don't know what to say after the intro.
Well, you deserve it. And we should say that I had the privilege and good time of interviewing you at the Boston Book Festival not long ago. And I thought, we got to get this man on our show because I think it'll be a lot of fun. So we're glad to have you.
Happy to be here.
And we want to invite our listeners into this program. Are you a 20 or 30 something struggling to find your way in life? What advice are you looking for? What do you wish your parents or your grandparents, mentors had taught you? And parents and grandparents, what wisdom do you readily share with the next generation, especially about money and especially in this troubled economy? You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And John Spooner, let's just start right away, if you don't mind, where you work, and that is the stock market. And I was thinking about this first question, and there's all kinds of troubling information and conflicting advice out there right now. I just read a big story in Time magazine, which basically says, the wave is over. It's time to get out of the water. And the message is, we're stuck with low, low growth for a long, long time, which means investing in lots of stocks is a bad deal and probably will be for a long time to come. It's kind of depressing. What's your thought about that?
I love to hear sound bites like this because the buzzwords come and go and technologies come and go, and so does the new thing is replaced by the newer thing. But what is eternal is human nature. And this has been true for thousands of years. So here's what I think in the cosmic sense. I think that stock markets and the movement of stock markets is 80% emotional, fear and greed primarily, and 20% reality. And it isn't just 4 years of tough stuff since the meltdown of the financial system. Mm. It's really a dozen years since the dot-com bubble burst. There's almost a whole generation of Americans who think nothing can be good ever again. And one thing I've been writing and saying to clients for several years is the news, folks, every day for the rest of your lives is going to be terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But it can have absolutely nothing to do with how the three of us sitting here in this broadcast room, how we thrive or don't thrive.
Mm.
And that we haven't repealed cycles in the last 4 years. And throughout history, sooner or later, high anxiety and fear turns to greed. And people say two things to me when I tell them this. One is, from your lips to God's ear. Or the second thing is, I won't live to see it. But they will live to see it. There will be a catalyst, whether it's a person or events, that change people's perceptions of things. And I've lived and worked through four panics, starting with the Kennedy assassination, crash of 87, 9/11, and the meltdown of the financial system. And those were real panics where everyone who called me said, it's over. We're going down the tube. And in every case, you should have been a buyer, not a seller. And if you were buying when everyone was panicky, you didn't just make out pretty well. You could have made out in a gangbusters sense.
So is that still the case today? Because there is a sense, and again, you know, maybe this is because I'm just, and actually you warn against this. When you say news, the media, and the dangers of they, who are they anyway? But mm-hmm. One of the things we're hearing that they are saying is that reliable sort of 3, 4, 5, 6 year cycle maybe finally coming to an end?
Well, as I say, I think we've been in this for 12 years.
Yes.
And the news is universally bad every day. And, oh, boy, let's just pull the covers over our head and go back to bed because I can't face it anymore. But I know that when there's anxiety, I want to be a buyer of not junk, but the strongest companies. For instance, I heard the founder of arguably the biggest money manager and mutual fund complex in the world at a forum in New York about a month ago. And this founder of this multi-billion dollar company said, I think the best bargain in the world today are the great U.S. global brands that have a fortress-like financial strength and that pay you more than 30-year treasuries, meaning, say, 3% or more. And
so these fortress-like companies, what, the Exxons, the General Electrics?
Well, I really, based on my mandate from Wall Street, I can't mention individual companies.
Right.
But we know what the big blue chips are that do business on a global basis. It's okay to, you know, think Coca-Cola or something like that. And that in many cases, the great brands are in the best financial shape of their lives in their histories because they've paid down debt for the last X number of years. And also the sad reality of layoffs. If you want to talk about unemployment and put unemployment in perspective a little bit, I think we're not going to see any relief on unemployment perhaps for a long time. I'll tell you why. Little illustration that I'm making up, but it will tell your listeners what the unemployment situation is really like. Say that I have four support staff, and my parent company says you've got to lose one of them, and I'm forced to fire one person. And I find, boy, the three who are left are worried about their jobs. They're working harder than they ever have to stay in their seats. And I don't have to pay an extra salary or a piece of it. And I say to myself, I'm getting more productivity out of three people than I got out of four. It's going to be a long time before I rehire the fourth. Kick this up to every corporation in America and saying the same thing. We're getting more productivity out of less workers. And technology, for instance, we used to have 10 guards in the lobby of our big building in downtown Boston. And now it's been cut in half. Why? They put in automatic machines. Every garage in the city of Boston used to have 8 workers, 9 workers. Now they have 2, just to see if the stupid parkers stick their chit in upside down and they help them so that there are jobs and are not going to be replaced by people. I asked
I just want to ask you about that point because one of the things that you referred to a moment ago was actually something I wanted to follow up on, and that is these big American companies, you mentioned that they're in better shape than ever before and they're sitting on wads of cash. Don't we need them to sort of unleash that cash and to build plants and make new investments and hire new workers to sort of see this economy really come out of the doldrums? So why are they sitting on that cash, and what is it going to take to convince them to start spending?
Primarily, the reason for sitting on these billions of dollars worth of cash is that corporations, big and small, even small little private companies, mom and pop stores, for instance, are not going to rehire or spend their cash because there's no clarity on what tax policy is going to be and what the entitlement situation is going
to
be.
So they're holding back to wait to see how all this shakes out.
To see if government actually gets off its duff and does something for us.
And what's your feeling about that? I mean, we see the market taking a bounce up today on word that maybe they're going to come to some kind of agreement about avoiding going over the fiscal cliff, which seems to me they inevitably will, right? It's not good for anyone to go off this
fiscal
cliff.
Well, you never know. But markets hate uncertainty.
I see, yeah.
And when there's uncertainty, there's still trillions of dollars in money funds earning virtually zero or treasuries at very, very low rates and CDs paying practically nothing. So the public, there are a lot of people who don't think that we've had a big upsurge in the last couple of years. You know, they just don't believe it. So we need some clarity, and the public isn't as stupid as, say, the media or government thinks we are. we're a lot smarter, and we're fed up on both sides of the aisle.
Let me ask you about a chapter that you call Getting Rich in the Stock Market, Concentration. And you use this word concentration, and your advice seems, at least in part, to run counter to this idea of diversifying. Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you recommend owning a lot of one thing, and that you should, and it should be something that you really know a lot about.
Well, say more about that. I was lucky to have a mentor that came out of tough stuff. I believe good things can come out of bad. And in 1973, my first firm went broke. And whatever money I had in the firm went south along with the firm. And the man who bought the firm, whose name was Sandy Weill, was a rookie or a young man at the time. And he built a powerhouse of investment firms over a period of 20 or 25 years. And he taught me in the 70s. He said, if you really want to get half-baked rich in the stock market, even if you don't own the business, concentrate, don't diversify. Find a company. In this case, it was the company that he built, but it could be using our own wits about us. Find a company that you think for the next 10 or 20 years is going to do extraordinarily well and start buying it. And every time things are tough or bad, if you still believe in the company, buy more, don't sell it. And even though you don't own the business, you can get very wealthy in the stock market if you pick. And you can be as conservative as you want. You think something is going to be extraordinary for the future. And if I have any real net worth, I have it only because of the concentration factor, not diversification.
Hmm.
Now, it takes patience,
yeah.
And it takes guts. When you feel it in your gut, oh, boy, I'm frightened. You should much more be a buyer than a seller.
Well, let's say we've got a lot of people who'd love to get in on this conversation. Listeners, we're talking to John Spooner and his new book, which is all about advice that he wrote to his grandkids, actually. You can join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-423-8255. Let's go to Jay, who's calling from Hamilton. Hi, Jay. You're on the air.
Hi. I'd just like to ask Mr. Spooner, being a young 24-year-old man out of college, thinking about going back to graduate school, and I was just curious when enough money was, enough in terms of making money. I want to be able to make enough money to be wealthy and happy, but at the same time, it seems like a lot of my peers are really focused on making, just as much money as possible, almost in a competitive winning kind of sense. And I was just curious Mr. Spooner's take on that. I'm sure he's been around a lot of, wealthy people in his life, and just kind of when enough was enough and to start sort of focusing on the other things in life.
Sure, Jay. Sounds like you're looking for balance there. John Spooner.
Well, number one, I hope you've got a passion in your life for something, and hopefully it's a passion for the career that you're going to seek. Maybe we'll get a chance to talk about how you really write resumes to get jobs in this tough climate. But whatever your job ultimately is, even if you have to force yourself to try and become a saver, first of all, whether it's establishing an IRA early or contributing to the 401k plan that your firm provides, even if it's a little bit, force yourself to get into the habit of savings. You're not going to be able to make big purchases of stock, but you start little. And this is not a concept unique to me, but if you buy anything in the stock market, it'd be very good to buy something you're familiar with. Buy the products or services you use and like, whether it's your shaving cream or you name it. Chances are there's a public company connected to it. But make sure, even if it's in small amounts, you get into the habit of saving. It will help you a lot as you get older.
Jay, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Ann, who's calling from Somerville. Hi, Ann. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
I had a question for Mr. Spooner. I'm a newlywed. My husband and I are both 27. We're pretty much savers. We both have Roth IRAs. They're very small. But we're both in the service industry. We both have pretty much gotten as high as we can get in our said jobs. If we were going to stay in this industry, we'd have to look into starting our own bar. or doing something entrepreneurial. And I'm just wondering, like, in the job market right now, we're not going to, it's so insecure and the economy is so insecure. What's the smartest way for us to start out? Should we be putting our money towards an entrepreneurial thing, or should we be putting more into our IRAs for retirement? I'm afraid if I put more savings into my IRA that I won't have liquidity for if I want to start my own business. Or should I be buying a house? Like, we're just so lost in the economy right now.
Big questions.
Yep, they are. And we could talk all night about all of these. But basically, if you guys want to break out of the pattern of working for other people in the service industry, and you've got a dream to own something of your own, then I'd kind of, you're at the age where if you invest, you should invest for long-term growth. And these days, you can have it both ways, meaning you can invest in things that pay you more than bonds, but have the ability to grow down the road. But my guess is the first thing that you're going to think about is buying an apartment or a house. One rule of life, never have enough money in something that you're forced to sell because you need to raise money. For instance, if you decide to buy a house tomorrow and you're in the stock market and suddenly down 10%, some rule says that if you're forced to sell real estate, stamps, or stocks, that if you're forced out, you'll always get the low price. Mm-hmm. So never be in a position where as you start to save money, you're going to be forced to sell. There's going to be another story in your lives, and I hope it's an entrepreneurial one, but never put yourself in a position where you stand to lose your assets or lose your house because you're forced to sell.
Ann, thanks so much for that call. Let's go to Brenda from Gloucester. Hi, Brenda. You're on the air with John Spooner.
Happy day. How you doing?
Very well.
I just wanted to say the one piece of advice that I give my grandson and to young people and actually people of any age that ask is to stay out of debt. You know, there's nothing you need bad enough except food and shelter to get into debt for. And we live in a crazy culture where people want everything. They feel entitled because they work hard. But the reality is if you can't afford it, don't take out a loan, don't use a credit card to buy it, you know, except for, you know, maybe your house or your car. But
sure, stay out of debt. Brenda, it sounds like words to live by. What do you think, John Spooner? Because I can imagine other people saying, hey, money is as cheap, interest rates are as low as they've ever been. This is a pretty good time to go into debt.
Well, what I believe in is the judicious use of debt. So since if you can get a mortgage, it's a wonderful time to buy real estate because you'll borrow at cheaper rates than ever before virtually in history. But debt can be a killer, meaning credit card debt or overextending yourself. It's one of the things that's got us in trouble on a massive basis, which is leverage. What is leverage? It's gee. I've got a dollar worth of assets and somebody will give me another dollar on top of it. So I only have a buck, but I control $2. We'll kick this up to hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions. And the massive debt, in some case, leverage got to 30-1 and nobody was paying attention or minding the store. So now we're in the process of not only stopping the bleeding, but kind of a new austerity. And it makes everybody very nervous. We've been in a constant state of nervous anxiety for 4 years or more. And I think one of the big lessons you can pass on to your grandchildren is debt can be a killer. Be careful of it. And if you have no debt, this might be a worthwhile thing. But also tell your grandchildren, 300 million Americans and growing, 7 billion people on the planet. Young people should start paying attention to how we can differentiate ourselves from the crowd. Tell them don't afraid to be different or take a contrarian path.
Hmm. John, your grandchildren in the book, they're real. Alyssa is 20 and Wesley is 18, I think, if I've got that right. I'm just curious, what sets this new 20-something, 30-something generation apart from older generations? And why are they in particular need of this kind of guidance?
When my entire generation grew up and the generation after mine, there were parents who were pretty strict, and there were limits set in every household. There was no such thing as the entitled generation. And I think that the current, I'm generalizing, but we have something like 2,000 clients all over the globe, so we're a pretty good indicator about what people are thinking. These aren't just so-called rich people either. They're all over the lot. If they're interesting and have a story to tell, we might take them on as clients no matter who they are. And I find that for the first time in American history, the current younger generation will not exceed their parents. And in a typical household where there are two or three kids, I'm seeing young people coming out of schools and two out of the three kids in a family needy, and one of the two needy ones, this is financially, completely needy, and maybe they're going to be needy forever. And if it's two children in a family, typically one is struggling. They're either coming home to live or they're on the dole, if you will, and receiving money from parents or grandparents on a monthly basis. This is hurting mom and dad all over the country. So that's a huge difference between former generations. And there was even a piece in the paper today about, I forget which paper, I look at so many of them, about that his parents' child came home with a ribbon for winning a race, and they were congratulating for winning the race. And he said, no, everybody won. Everybody came in first.
That's right. That's
well,
the new way.
The biggest lessons we learn in life are from the bumps in the road and the tough stuff we've all been through. And you can't wrap kids in cotton batten. I had a grandmother who wished that I wore three snowsuits at once so that, you know, I wouldn't hurt myself. And it's a wonder I survived. But this is ubiquitous through the current generation of parents,
sure,
in my view.
John Spooner, let me try to squeeze one more call in here. We're running low on time, but John is calling from Dedham. Hi, John. We'd love to have your question quickly, please.
Hi. I'll be quick. I'm 50 years old, and through a number of circumstances, too boring and probably too common to enumerate, but basically I've got no money. I do have a good job. I pay into a state pension fund for my job, but I've only been at it for a few years. I had a 401k at one time, but circumstances did force me to liquidate that. And basically I'm trying to get back into the game. I've got maybe 15 more years of good working time left. What do I do?
All right, there it is, John Spooner.
Well, are you still on the line? Do you,
you
so the main place for savings is into the pension plan, into your state pension plan.
Yeah, that's where. As a matter of fact, I have a mandatory contribution into that plan, 11% of my income.
Okay. Well, this is going to be your retirement stake, of course, but I can guarantee this: almost all Americans, forget about age 65 retirement. People are going to be working later and later and later, and not just to have the so-called good life. I think more and more there's a recognition of retirement isn't not nirvana. We need life around us, folks, and this is always true. And
so the fact that we have to keep working might be a little bit of good news.
Because the aches and pains don't come in as quickly if we're surrounded by life. We need the adrenaline pumping. So stay at it is my advice to you.
John, thanks so much for that call. And John Spooner, I think that's a great piece of advice to end this segment on. Thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
John Spooner is an investment advisor at Morgan Stanley Smith Barney in Boston. He's also author of No One Ever Told Us That, Money and Life, Letters to My Grandchildren. You can find an excerpt at our website where you can also continue the conversation. Karen Cass McBride tweets, work hard, try your best, give of yourself, be yourself, and remember at the end of the day, it is you who has to live with yourself. Thank you for that. Stay with us. Coming up in less than a year, Maestro Benjamin Zander went from forced resignation from the NEC Youth Orchestra to founding a new and promising Boston Philharmonic Youth Orchestra. He's here to tell us about that journey. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.